Everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now, my shit together is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. You're listening to Kidwell on the board. SP Futures down 215. NASDAQ Futures down 37. Brennan, how are you, bud?
I'm doing fine, Chief. How are you this morning?
I don't know. I thought you'd be grabbing the short sword this morning after reading about the new tax plans affecting one percenters. Like, you know, I'm not going to say you're one of those people, but, you know.
Thinking about that, but I am also a little upset about the White Sox losing Luis Robert again after already losing Eloy Jimenez, and looks like the World Series may not happen this year without those two guys.
Well, I will say this, that they picked up this Mercedes guy, and I haven't even noticed Jimenez being gone since that guy's been there, but still can't keep losing
true.
Your best people.
That's true, but I just think about it, what it would be like if Jimenez was still in the order, as well as Luis Robert, as well as Mercedes. Because you're right, Mercedes has really lit the league on fire in the first month, if they can only keep that up.
Well, I don't know, I look back upon, of course, the Cubs managed to call the game yesterday, what, like 3 o'clock or something? And it turned out, I don't think it ever rained enough to really even stop play, but maybe it did. I don't know. I wasn't looking out the whole time, but they did a flashback of the top 50 home runs in Cub history. And, you know, you look back, a lot of these guys, I don't know what the difference, you really wonder, Brendan, and you're obviously, for those that don't know, Brendan's been a spectacular runner his entire life, a coach for marathon, and has run, 100 marathons. I mean, It makes you wonder if the injuries that these young, very in-shape people are having today. This is where I'm going with this, is that when Dr. J and I used to work out at River City, there was a guy that did this is back in the 80s. I mean, he did a tabloid. What do you call the tabloid that comes out every week? It was like a fitness paper. It wasn't a magazine format. It was a newspaper format. It looked like the Sun-Times tablet. And he came out every week, and it was about fitness, and you get it in all the health clubs. And there was a doctor that had a page every week, and he would talk about stuff. And he said, you know, I get more people here that are into my office that I'm treating because of stretching before they do something than when they did it. He goes, no matter what you're doing, he says, you might want to stretch afterward. He says, but whatever sport you're doing, the best warm-up is doing whatever it is you're going to be doing at a speed gradually working up to you're going to be doing it. If you're playing basketball, you want to jog up and down the floor and do layup drills. He goes, you don't want to be...
I agree with that completely. I think that a lot of the injuries right now are due to doing too much other than the sport that they're doing. Like with my runners, I have them start off for the first mile of the run at a nice, slow, easy jog, gradually pick up the pace for a mile, maybe a little bit more. And likewise, at the end of the long run, do the same thing. Slow down gradually before just stopping dead. And with the stretching, I recommend they stretch afterwards, not beforehand. And, if you go to some of these events and before, you see these aerobic instructors doing all kinds of jumping and all kinds of stuff. Those aren't the muscles to use when you're running. But getting back to the baseball story, I agree that a lot of the injuries are really weird injuries. Like Robert tore a hip flexor when he was running the first base. Jimenez was trying to rob a home run by jumping over the wall and hit the wall so hard that he tore his pectoral muscle. Both of those are very unusual injuries for baseball players. I mean, you can think about broken arms, torn labrum, ACLs and hamstrings and things for baseball players. But these are really weird injuries that they have.
Well, hip flexor, for somebody in the mid-20s to blow out a hip flexor running the first, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
That's a football injury where you get nailed by somebody's helmet in the side, right?
Right.
The fact is the guy's hurt, and I hope he comes back fine because he's a hell of a player and he seems like a pretty good guy. So, Sox,
and the same thing with Jimenez. You know, Jimenez seems to be a really good guy and a good person and a very likable guy. He's one of the life wires of the team in the dugout. He brings a lot of joy. You see him; he's always mugging for the camera, saying hello to his mom. And that happens whether he's having a great game or a mediocre game or even a not so good game at all. And you know, it always seems like that. Like he's enjoying the game. He's playing it in a childlike fashion.
Well, it is. You know, it was like that is Anthony Rizzo, because part of that has to be because the guy's a cancer survivor. I mean, he just realizes that he's better than most of us, that every day is a good day, you know, especially if you're playing baseball, for God's sake. Now, what about a guy like you, say like a one percenter, looking at all these tax things flashing by here? Just saying.
Well, you know, there's a part of me that says that people should pay more taxes when they're in that level, and especially when you look at from a philosophical level, when you're looking at the disparity of income ratios around the country, that's not such a bad thing, within reason. But you know, I think it's going to be necessary for the benefit of the country, and I think that there's a lot of people who believe that. And I also think that, you know, increasing the corporate taxes is also justifiable. When you look at how many of the big companies, big corporations, don't pay any taxes at all or pay minimal taxes, I think that there is a need for more taxes and less loopholes. For example, if you look at a guy like Donald Trump, who brags about how much money he made and he paid $750 a year in taxes, I mean, come on. People who are barely making minimum wage are paying more in taxes than he does. And yet he's getting all the benefits of the country and for virtually nothing. And I don't think that's fair.
Well, I think one of the issues you have, or I have, is I'm kind of in a totally... Well, here's my camp. It's very simple, Brendan. We're both aging together, but... I think anytime somebody doesn't pay, I have to pay more, and the people I care about have to pay more. So nobody's more rigid. But I honestly believe that because you happen to be in charge as president, whether you're Trump, whether you're Biden, I don't, you know, they're all the same to me. I mean, I'm not saying that their personalities are and their you know, their abilities and their willingness to lie or whatever is the same. And I don't know them all personally, but. They're all the same in a sense. They all want to curry favor for the people that support them. And I really think that if it were me, and I think just about every contributor to the show would feel the same way, I want to get the taxes as minimal as possible, and I want every bleep to pay. I mean, the issues that Trump has with his taxes. I mean, why is it? I mean, first of all, you probably know this better than most on the show, you and John Flanagan. But I'm going to say that Trump's story with his taxes has a lot to do with some very special, I'll say, workarounds that are people in real estate have that nobody else has. And I'm not the tax guy, and we should get we used to have a tax guy, and I don't know, I think he retired or whatever, Mr. Robert Raiola. But I think that for instance, if you were to put, if you were a trader on the trading floor, and you put, you know, $200,000 in an account, and something weird happened, and you blew out for $300,000, you don't get to deduct $300,000 because you only had $200,000 at risk.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the real estate, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong, somehow or another, you get to take that entire amount. So even if Trump...
Over a period of time, yes.
So even if Trump had... You know, I don't think he ever had a billion anywhere, but say he had a billion, and I think I'm way over on that, in Trump Tower Bemidji or someplace, and the place goes under to the tune of $10 billion worth of debt. I think somehow he gets to use the other nine, even though he hit He wasn't at risk. And I think that's, again, I'm talking off the top of my head here, but I think that's unique to real estate. And it's never going to change because those people are pretty much power. A lot of what you're seeing is, I mean, I don't need some guy who owns a farm, a family farm, and has owned it for 80 years or 100 years. I don't need him paying 61% when he dies to make up for the corporations that were overseas for 20 years and didn't pay anything. I think that's horrendous, Brendan. I don't think anybody should ever have to pay 61% of anything. Do you? I mean, that's not including local and state.
What I'm hearing is that you agree that the tax laws need to be changed and that certain people need to be paying more taxes, which I agree with, and for many of the same reasons. It's not just real estate, though, that has those kind of benefits.
Who else? I mean, when you say that,
a lot of corporations do the same thing. I mean, you look at some of the offshore corporations that are hiding money, that are still making billions of dollars. Look at the oil companies, how much they make on an annual basis, and they pay very little in taxes. So I think that needs to be shored up quite a bit. And I don't think that's something that's bad for Biden's economic plan. And I think that it's a false narrative for many of the Republicans to say that the trickle-down theory of economics is going to work.
Well, I don't buy that. But
it's going to work at all.
Yeah, I want to be part of the trickle-downers. I want to be the guy. Well, I'd love to be. I'd trickle down better than these other guys. every bar I go into, I'd buy everybody around. I guarantee if I went to Bass, give me $2 billion, I'll go to Bass Pro Shops tomorrow, I'll be bass boats around. These other guys don't trickle. I'd be one of the best tricklers there is.
Yeah, but you're an exception to the rule. You are exceptional, Chief.
Well, I'm something. But I guess what I'm saying, Brad, you can't ever be unfair to the next person to make up for the person before.
No, I agree with you. And your statement that if some people, like very high-income people and corporations, don't pay, then whatever they don't pay in the grand scheme of things falls upon the rest of us. In this case, it is pretty close to a zero-sum game that guys like you or me or many of the listeners will have to pay if corporations don't pay a cent or pay very minimal. And I think that has to be looked at in this context. And people have to be willing to say, if I'm getting the benefits of this company, of this country, in the way of roads, in the way of many other benefits, then I should have to pay something, whether I'm a corporation or an individual. I have a responsibility to the rest of the public, not to hoard my money, but to share it because I'm getting the benefit of this. I can't get a free ride.
Well, I think there's a bunch of things here we're talking about. And as a matter of fact, I created quite a brouhaha one night almost. One of Audrey's friends, still a friend, I think, even after I talked to her. God. her husband... I won't say the name of the company, but was a CEO of one of these places. You know, so she ends up marrying a guy, and he's quite a bit older. And of course, they have the prenup where she gets like nothing. Then every year she got like a little more if she hung in there, whatever it was. Anyway, but so the guy croaks, right? So she's talking about his management of the company and blah blah blah, and how they didn't he never cheated on his taxes. At the company, because he was so straight. Brendan, I'm going to say in my lifetime, there's probably less than 10 people when I first met him that I just took an instant dislike to. This guy was one of them. Let's put it this way. The company he was involved at sold road salt. And the first night we went out to dinner was a brutal night. I barely made it in my four-wheel drive vehicle. And it was just nasty, accidents all over the place. And all he did was talk about what a great night it was for selling salt. I'm like, how many people are banging into each other at night and getting hurt, and you're worried about... I mean, it was a bad thing. But, I said to her, it's not about cheating. I said, every company has two sets of books. And I said, there's a lot of preference items that have been around forever. And I don't know that they're right or wrong, but they've been around forever. And in fact, we had a show we donated. We dedicated one show, a whole 45-minute segment to Bob Golden, our dear departed Bob Golden. Talked about how, and he could, maybe you could, maybe when I was younger, how he could take your annual report and he could back in to the tax return. And I was like, I said, you know, every company has two sets of books. They have a book, a set that they put out there for the, you know, these are the people that actually have a set of books that's audited and everything. Not every company does now. That is listed. Used to have to. So they come out there and they say, okay, Brendan Inc. Paid, you know, 35% in taxes last year, or what's the corporate rate now? 21. You paid your 21% on this month in month income, and everybody, all the uninformed in the world, sit there and say, oh, gee, Brendan actually sent in that check. Well, that's BS, because you actually have a second set of books, which is perfectly legal, where all of a sudden now, instead of straight line depreciation, you're going to be doing double declining balance, or you're going to be doing some of the year's digits, or some where you're accelerating your depreciation, and all of a sudden you do something, you're depreciating the leasehold on your plane or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's ways, so there's a difference between those two books. And the second set of books, you might actually be paying 5%, you know.
Right.
And but then if you look at the annual report, there's going to be a footnote that says, oh, by the way, there's an item on the balance sheet, a reserve for what they call it, a reserve for taxes or taxes that are,
well,
been
they,
put
they have EBITDA, the earnings before depreciation, etc. That shows a much different line than what you saw when it goes to the IRS for the amount of taxes that are paid. But your point is an accurate one, but it's not cheating on the taxes.
No,
it's taking advantage of what has already been built into the code.
Right,
years
that's
of
not cheating.
To protect different types of corporations and high-risk individuals.
But when you look at your ExxonMobil, for instance, those guys always put right on there whatever the rate was, 30%, they showed themselves mm-hmm. paying as 30%.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be a timing difference, because if you do that for your depreciation, you're actually going to be paying more in the later years. So it actually should be a timing difference and not a dodge, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But some of the stuff we're talking about, but what I'm saying, I also think that no matter who you are, 25%, 30%, 35% is all the government should ever be taking from anybody, Brendan. Not 61. They're talking about.
I
now,
agree with that. I think that's a very high number. But right now, you know, I think, is that the number that I didn't see the number?
If you end up right now, there used to be a stepped up basis. So if you owned a huge farm or you owned stock. And you croak, and all of a sudden, Brendan Jr., either the farm or the stock goes to Brendan Jr. He had a stepped up basis. Now, I don't agree with the stepped up basis part. Stepped up basis means that Brendan Jr., if the farm was in your name at $1 million and it's now worth $100 million, that he actually would get a basis of like $100 million, which I don't agree with, but I think his. I don't think his basis should be 100, but he shouldn't be forced to sell it either. But under this new thing, mm-hmm. the dude is going to have to pay 43%, and you're going to basically going to have to sell it, because he's going to owe the tax right away on $100 million. So you're going to have to sell it. So if you combine the 43% capital gains tax, and oh, by the way, since he just croaked and he's over the $1 million minimum or whatever it is on estate taxes, he's got to pay that too. So it's going to turn out to be pushing 62%. And you lose your farm. Well, mm-hmm. Brendan, that's not right. That's not right.
I agree.
So,
that's not right. But I think the transfer is at $11 million, not $1 million for at the time of death. But still,
yeah, you're right. It's probably still, 11. Okay.
Yeah. You know,
that's because you.
But you're right. I mean, anything over the $11 million, and but I agree with you that the stepped-up basis is something that needs to be looked at. It helps to keep some of the property in the family, but it still has other ramifications. But I don't think that that's really the big issue here. I think as many more of the corporate loopholes, particularly for areas like real estate, like you're talking about the real estate developers, there are a lot of things which are very faithful to them under the guise of something that's socially needed. If you look, for example, at low-income housing that's generated in, say, the city of Chicago through tax credits, most of those are put together by developers who syndicate out the amount for their tax credits for their housing. The developers and their LLCs or corporations have a very, very small percentage, usually less than 1% of the value of those houses. If the deal goes bad, they're on the hook for less than 1% of the value of those houses. The rest of it is usually forgiven or just goes away. And that's not there because, in many cases, they're not taking that much of a risk. There's very little skin in the game. yet if it goes bad, they walk away with no implications. If it doesn't, if it succeeds, they make quite a bit of money through the management fees and through the life of the project.
Well, that's the Trump thing I'm talking about. But he's right. he's not the only person.
That's one example.
But I'm saying the tax law is let's put it this way. It's been overrun like the fleas of a thousand camels, right? With mm-hmm. intentions toward getting a few people, and it gets everybody but the few people.
Right.
I mean, the idea that... But the thing of it is, Brennan, and I think those of you who actually believe this show has a theme, the theme is that everything matches up with everything else, Brennan. In other mm-hmm. words, we can't have this conversation, even though we have for 20 minutes, and it's been a good one, by the way. Thank you. We can't have this conversation without also listening to Feds barking yesterday. And nothing bothers me more, Brendan, I think, than intelligent people making buffoons out of themselves because they have to stick to a party line. Now, here's a guy. We just had Warren Buffett and who's this guy? Munger, the two old dudes around there. And these guys, they're old enough now where they're not lying, right? I mean, they're mm-hmm. going to tell the truth because they don't care, right? I mean, they're at that stage. And Warren Buffett says, prices are up all over the place. He goes, every company I'm involved in, all we're doing is raising prices, and everybody's raising prices of everything we're buying from them. He goes, it's out of control, or something along mm-hmm. those lines. So then you got the Fed guy on here barking, talking about how, well, we might have a little inflation this year and next year, but it'll come right back. Whenever in the history of the world did inflation come right back? Ever? I mean, it's never happened. So why do I have to pay an economist to act like a buffoon on national TV? But my point being is you can't divorce what we're talking about, a farm that has inflated value now, not inflated, but the guy bought it for whatever, $100,000 in 1920, and now it's worth $100 million, right? Or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
You can't divorce that from a government now that is clearly inflating the place so they can pay people back with money that's worth less than they borrowed it, or something like, if they're even smart enough to put two and two together. I think they probably mm-hmm. are, actually. So you can't divorce the fact what we're talking about from what the policy is. And if the world goes like it's going, it's plain as day to me anyway, it would in 10 years, everybody's going to have this issue. Everybody's going to have a house. Everybody's going to have a building that they bought for $100,000 and it's now worth $400,000, and they're all going to be paying 61%? Because, I mean, well, they've been on something that's worth nothing more than
that. The bad part about that is that even in real estate, when it goes up, it goes down. And we've all seen depressions in the real estate market independent of inflation. So that's one area. But, you know, another thing that when we're talking
Wait. Before I let you get away with that, I'm not giving you crap. I'm just, before I let you get away with that, we had all that inflation back in the 70s, right, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're about to have it again. You can't tell me that the prices of houses ever went back to where they were in 1971.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that that even when there's a high rise in the value of real estate, it goes back down. And it follows along like with the latest school theory. I'm willing to pay... If somebody bought a house for $20,000 in 1978, and by 1998 that house is worth $500,000, not because the house has been improved, but because of inflation and in real estate markets, that it might go down to $300,000with the next decline. It's not going to go back to the $20,000 that it was. I mean, think of all the bungalows on the south side of Chicago that in the 70s were being sold for $20,000 or most $30,000 that are now a few hundred thousand dollars to buy. I'm not saying that it goes back to those original prices, but I said that they go back down a little bit in the readjustment of the market.
But still, you're going to have some...
Before we end the segment, the other thing that I find very interesting right now going on in Washington is the return of earmarks in the federal government, that both Republicans and Democrats are now looking to have earmarks in the budget when they're planning their budget for the next year. And I think that's a very, very interesting development. And... You know, for some folks, they say this is the only way we're going to get agreement is if I can trade earmarks to get your vote on mine. And you're familiar with earmarks, right? But
well, first of all, I'm going to say
it. Earmark a page in the budget where my pet project gets into the budget, like the bridge to nowhere up in Alaska, that the, in order to some of the Alaskan representatives and senators that they would fund this bridge to bring jobs and money into Alaska. But the bridge went from one island to the mainland, and it cost like $200 or $300 million, and people on the island were limited to, there were 50 people living on the island, and it would have saved them about a 15-minute drive going to the airport, but yet the government was willing to spend over $200 million to build this bridge. It never got built. It was partially funded, and it wasn't built, but yet the idea was that to appease some of the Alaskan legislators, this was put into the budget and improved. And now they're going back to earmarks. Both Republicans and Democrats have said we're going to bring back earmarks for our budgetary process.
Well, there was a buddy of yours. He used to be mayor of the city, and he's still with us. I used to talk to him at the health club all the time, and we got a dash here in a second, Brennan. And I said, your first 2 years as a representative, how do you know you're doing a good job? And the answer was you bring at least $1 million back to your district.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, good government, but there's also... there's no way on earth that we can send, we'll send you, because you're retired, we'll send you to government instead of one of the guys we have there. If people are winging this kind of money around, Brendan, and you come home with nothing, I'm going to say, what are you doing out there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right? I mean, there are times when there's no money being wung around, but right now, if you can't find a way to come back to your district with an earmark, something's really wrong with you. Where are you spending your time? In a motel with the girls? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, that's right. And you know, that gets onto the philosophy of who you're sending as a representative. Do you send somebody that you want to bring court back to your district, or do you want to take somebody who has a broader view and say, you know, if I'm going to bring back $1 million and give it to a development the chief is running, then that makes me a good guy because I'm bringing $1 million back to my constituents here in my district, even if that's not good for the country because of, like Dirksen said, you know, a million here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now that saying is a trillion here, a trillion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. But the same concept. Are you going to do something to vote on something just to say you're bringing money back to the district?
Let me say that
it doesn't make sense.
You and I are both Southside honest guys, Catholic education, but we're also Southsiders, Brendan. If we don't want to bring garbage back just for money in our district, but if we're spreading around $1.8 trillion, and we don't come back with a nickel, neither one of us are going to be happy.
I understand that. I understand that, and I understand that if a representative or a senator does not bring stuff back to the state, then he's not going to be a representative or senator for very long because people are going to see that over in Wisconsin or Indiana or West Virginia or someplace are getting millions of dollars for something, and why isn't my guy doing that?
I understand that completely. I'm
going
to vote against opening up a briefcase out of a helicopter and winging $100 bills on State and Madison. But if we're going to do that, I better catch at least one.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's... you and I came from the right neighborhood to know the difference there. I'd rather we didn't do it, but if we're going to do it, I want mine, right?
I understand that. I understand that's the philosophy of a lot of people in this country, that they look at it as, I may be opposed to this, but I'm willing to look the other way. I'm willing to be joining this. If everybody else is doing it.
But
and,
this is we
that
gotta
troubles
do,
me on,
it troubles
on
me.
Many fronts.
Troubles me, but if the money's allegedly for nursing homes, whether they need it or not, I got nursing homes in my district, I better get some of it.
I understand that. And I know that's the way of the world. I know that's the way it works. I'm not that naive to think that it doesn't work that way. But it exacerbates the problem. It doesn't solve the problem.
I would think you and I would
more in the way of inflation and more in the way of deficits.
One of these days I'll tell you a story when I couldn't put two and two together. We're way over here, Brennan, which is always good. SP Futures down 5, SP Futures down 50. Be right back, Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and low pace, stocks and jocks. Time to come out. Being Kidwell on the board. SP Futures down 7. Now NASDAQ Futures down 63. Yesterday was kind of an odd day. We had the, we'll review that real quick. Dow was up 238. S&P was up 11, but the NASDAQ was down 67, so it's kind of a mixed bag. And today we've got the NASDAQ heading back south here again. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 17.1%, FTSE down up 62.9%, so a nice rally there. CAC around up 47.7. Over in Asia, now these guys were down pretty heavy yesterday. Nikkei down again, 241.8%. Shanghai down 28.8%. Wait a minute. These are Friday dates here. So they obviously are closed. Hang Seng, however, is open. They're up 199. That's 0.7. Well, that's Joel in a second why they're closed. I don't know why they're closed. Bonds, unchanged at 1.61 10-year. To Bund, minus 0.20. Japan, positive 0.09. So basically unchanged there. Oil up $1.10, 65.59. Brent up 120, 68.76. Natural gas down a penny, a 2.94. RBOB up 4 cents, 2.14. As you've noticed, every time you go by the gas station, it goes up. Gold down 9 bucks, but 17.82. It's up pretty heavy yesterday. Silver down, down a half a penny, so 26.95. Copper unchanged. And we've got our favorite crypto down 1,200 bucks, 56,298. And what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? The Cubs called their game early, and then I don't even know if it rained.
Yeah, it was just kind of drizzling, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they just didn't have any pitchers left or something.
Cubs were rained out, and the Sox were off, and it looks like the Bulls lost to the 76ers, 94-106. Did you catch that game?
I did. They were awful. The 76ers took their starters out in the fourth quarter, and the Bulls came flying back and made a game, or they put their starters back in. They weren't happy.
Huh. Sounds like a fun game.
Yeah.
intriguing.
The Hawks, however, absolutely sucked. I mean, they had no business on the ice with these guys, and they got to play them two more times in a row with this crazy schedule. And this is the Carolina Hurricanes, and they're like one of the best teams in hockey. And the Hawks just got no business on the ice with them. It's terrible.
Yeah, it looks like they lost 2-5.
And it wasn't as close as the score would indicate. Let's put it that way.
In Chicago, the East Eisenhower is delayed due to police activity. And if you're driving, keep your eye out for that 1:20 and 6:40 Cubs games today. Looks like there's a doubleheader. In Chicago, the weather is cloudy with a high of 54. And in Phoenix, it is, as always, a high of 94 and sunny.
Amazing to me that we got one of these split doubleheaders with, like, nobody in the stands. This is insane. For every little nickel these guys got to get.
Do they have the doubleheaders because of the delay yesterday?
Yeah, but the point being is they have these. It used to be the doubleheader, you went and you got to see both games. But now when they have these split doubleheaders. They have one during the day, and it's a totally separate crowd at night, so they get essentially two tickets on the day instead of one. But with so few people in the stands, do they really need to do that? Well, ask Joel. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I actually won our little office pool in the Derby.
I heard you say Derby.
I won our little office pool in the Derby, so it's the first pool I've won in 30 years. So, I guess I should be happy.
Was it just a random thing? Or,
I picked one out of the hat. I didn't watch it or anything, but. And we didn't catch you on Friday, so I really didn't even know who the hell was running.
No. And boy, I'll tell you, we got something going on in the markets right here. That's the peas are completely falling out of bed. I'm not sure what is going on. I'm looking for news here. Well, the good news is I had fun doing my article, and I did I did a little video podcast. Wow, we got something going on, Chief. Are you seeing anything?
I'm looking at every station I can find here. All I know is we just dropped 15 points in the S&P in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, boy, that gets your bun boiling here. So I picked Rock Your World, and I was really confident of the horse, and I don't know if you watched the race, but he got rocked, like, right out of the starting gate. He was late coming out of the gate. He got hit by Highly Motivated. Highly Motivated popped him into another pony, and he just the rider's feet came out of the stirrups. They're called irons, and he just never got his footing here. He beat Medina Spirit by 4.5 lengths in the Santa Anita. So, that's just racing luck, It's just right away I knew the race was over, but Baffert pulls out his seventh win, and we'll see what happens. But it was fun. It was good to see 50,000 people there and a little bit things back to normal. So I guess we're all kind of winners in this year at Kentucky Derby.
Were you down there in the boxes hanging around with the high-end ladies with the hats and the mint juleps?
Years and years ago, Lisa and I talked about going to a derby, and been a thing that was on our bucket list, but in the last year, we kind of moved back off the bucket list a little bit. I don't know if I'll ever make it to a derby.
If you went, how much would you have to budget for the hat for the wife?
They're pretty fancy, huh?
Oh yeah,
I didn't watch much of the pregame stuff or the pre-race stuff because I don't know. I just get nervous watching all that stuff. But it's fun. It's beautiful. Turned out to be a great day, and it's weird to have a Kentucky Derby in October than have one come right back in May, but we'll see if Medina Spirit has what it takes to be a Triple Crown winner. Should be nice to see one of those.
They're in order this year. Preakness next.
Yep, back to the normal. Yep, exactly.
Well, that's good.
Preakness is in 2 weeks. That's a mile and three teenies, and then of course the Belmont, a mile and a half. And that's the big test, and that would be, I believe, at the end of May or probably first weekend in July.
Joel, what? At some point here, we're kind of burying the world with these tax plans. Do you think the market's going to, at some point, I mean, it's a big...
Care?
Yeah, I think it's... Is it going to care?
Yeah, I think it's caring right now. And I think yesterday, I don't like to, flip on a dime and, go from bullish, uber bullish, to neutral, to bearish. I don't want to necessarily stick with, sell in May and go away. But I think yesterday's price action was pretty telling. I heard you mention the NASDAQ. I mean, Amazon, has that kind of report, gives it all back on Friday, and then loses 100 stakes yesterday, and that was traded down $30. That's pretty goddamn good earnings reports. I don't know what the street wants. So I think we might, I think that selling May might bear some fruit this year, at least wait. Things traded yesterday and the way we're looking today, we're starting out in the red pretty good. I'm still not seeing what just happened there, but that was a pretty good sell off there just as as I was coming on.
Well, Joel, it's a odd message coming out of Washington. Well, it's not, I guess it's not odd, but they're basically saying we're going to inflate your asset prices to the moon, but by the way, we're going to take the money, not you. isn't that the message, or am I being too crude?
They got to pay for the infrastructure somehow, and I think this might be a couple of my buddies had talked to about the markets. They're like, when's the market going to wake up about, this tax, and how much is that going to hurt earnings of, the big corporations? And I don't know if they just flipped the switch and hit it yesterday. I mean, Democrats are more about Main Street than Wall Street, but, Wall Street has definitely done very well here early in the presidency. But there's always turns in the market. I don't know if we're at one after such an incredible run, nearly doubling off that last March low. But we certainly haven't had any volatility. Corrections are good for the market. People don't like that. They always want everything to go up and up and up and up. But a little bit of pullbacks are good for the market. Test the validity of the rallies.
Well, you and I know that, but I don't think that's the way a lot of people think now. Joel, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures, like we've been talking about, now down 1975. Make that 20. NASDAQ down 116. A very brief break. We'll be back with Kenny Pulcheri.
Surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty, and a...
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Ian Kidwell on the board. S&P futures up now down 23. NASDAQ futures down 124. Mr. Kenny Pulcheri is going to be here, and he's going to explain to us what the hell just happened, Kenny.
I'm here, but you got to speak into the phone because I can hardly hear you.
All right. What just happened to the market here? You know all this stuff.
I can't hear you. What?
Oh, so what just happened to our market here? Down 22 points all of a sudden.
Well, because, listen, I think this is more churn and burn, right? I mean, I think the market's struggling. I think 4,200 is a level, even though we pierced it last week, it was a level that we found some resistance at. And now, after what we saw yesterday with the ISM prices paid component of a strong ISM report, all that suggests is that the inflation story is becoming more real. Because, look, the ISM prices paid component was the highest it's been in two decades, right? That's 20 years. It's the highest it's ever been. And so it's going to be more and more difficult for everybody at the Fed and the Treasury, i.e. Janet Yellen and Jay Powell, to keep telling us that inflation is transitory, it's non-existent, don't worry about it, slow down, big boy, it's all good. And when reality says, not so fast, because more and more signs continue to point to the building inflation, and it doesn't feel like it's transitory. At least it doesn't feel to investors at the moment that it's transitory, which is why you saw, you know, tech get wrecked yesterday. I mean, listen, the Nasdaq was only down small, 68 points, yet individual names and really a lot of the tech disruptor names, mega cap Amazon is down another 2.3%. That's off 7% from last week's high. And so, therefore, some of those names are coming out of some of the money's coming out of those names, right? And going where? It's going right into the recovery and the value trade.
Kenny, when do our guys? I just mentioned it to Brendan earlier. When do our guys? When you see the two old dudes, Warren Buffett and Munger, on TV, all they do is talk about. I mean, they basically fed flat out there. They were Kenny Pulcheri. Hey. We're raising prices on everything. Everybody's raising prices up. It's going crazy. And then 20 minutes right. later, we get this, I won't say buffoon, barking, the Fed's barking, talking about, oh, no, it's barely starting. And, oh, by the way, we might have some inflation this year and early next, but then it'll come right back down. Kenny, when has it ever come right back down, ever? In anything, not even in our lifetime, in anything you've ever read, when has it ever come right back down?
Listen, it took a long time. You remember, again, you and I, this is where we go back, right? We go back into history. You know, when we were just young men in late 70, early 80s, when inflation was, you know, pushing 13%, right? And interest rates were 21%. When did it come back down? It came back down after a lot of pain and after the Reagan tax cuts and after Fed Chair Volcker at the time decided that he's going to break the back of inflation, stagnation, and all that stuff and start cutting rates. And as you know, that was the birth of the greatest bull market there ever was. But it took a long time. Not only did it take a long time for inflation to rear its ugly head, but it took a long time to try to calm it down and bring it back. And I think that, at least from my point of view, because we lived it, and so I can speak from experience the way you can, is that you know, for people say, no, this time it's different, not going to happen. How many times have we heard this time it's different? It's not different. Guess what? Wake up. It's not different.
But why are, what is it? And we have Jeff who's on after you, did a whole, he's editor of Luckbox magazine, and they did a whole magazine, Kenny, on the alleged new monetary theory. And the one lady who's, by the way, Biden put her on her economics council. The deficits don't matter, money supply doesn't matter. And they've managed to take the weekly money supply, they don't give it to you anymore, right? And they've totally decimated M1 by making it the same as M2. So you can't even really tell what's going on in the banks with these checks and everything. But by not telling us, I mean, fact is, Kenny, I mean, that what I've seen is this inflation is a very lagging indicator. And if you spend 3 years saying it's not there when it is, you're going to also be telling people for 3 years somewhere down the line that it's there when it isn't. Because it's going to be lagging the other way.
What happens is, and this is my fear, and I've been saying it all along, is that they keep saying it's not here, it's not here. Meanwhile, it is. And so they end up being behind the eight ball versus in front of the eight ball. And that's when it spins out of control. And that's when suddenly you're going to see, all of a sudden, there's going to be a taper conversation, which, you know, Jay Powell told us last week, oh, don't worry about it. We'll give you plenty of time before we even think about thinking about it to tell you that maybe we're thinking about it. Meanwhile, that's not going to be the way it is. Suddenly, it will come upon us. And look, Dallas Fed President over the weekend, who's not a voting member of the FOMC, made a comment that he thinks it's time to start the paper conversation. And so yesterday, right away, Johnny Williams, New York Fed president, who is a member of the FOMC voting committee, came out and said, oh, no, we're not anywhere near being ripe enough yet to have that conversation. And so today, it's going to be very interesting because there's two Fed presidents speaking, right? You got Chicago's Charlie Evans, who is a member of the voting committee. Listen to what he says, how he says it, the tone he says it. And then Loretta Mester, who is not a member of the voting committee, but she may represent some of the thought on the outside of that room. And so therefore, both those conversations today, while they'll be Zoom and virtual presentations, are going to be very interesting for investors to listen to hear if the tone is different, to hear if the tone, you know, is diverging away from what Jay Powell says to more what Bobby Kaplan says. And so I think that's going to be part of the driver today.
Kenny, would it be too gross for me to say, because these people aren't doing violence. Remember the movie The Clockwork Orange?
Yeah.
Of course, Ian will have no idea what I'm talking about. But the guy was a brutal guy, right? So the punishment was that they made him stare at brutal scenes like raping people and stuff, right? And they made his head stare, and they put toothpicks in his eyes so he couldn't close his eyes. Any chance we could do that to these people when we have incredible inflation, like a year from now, to make them watch what they said on TV when they knew they were saying something wrong? I'm just saying.
We'll do Clockwork Orange to everybody at the Fed and the Treasury.
Yeah, we can take a few politicians. We'll throw in there too.
When Bobby Kaplan made those comments about it's time to have the conversation, Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, ran right out, and she tried to divert the conversation, saying, oh, don't worry, Biden's infrastructure plan and his massive spending and tax plan isn't going to contribute to inflation because it's going to be spread out over 10 years. And I said in my note yesterday, Janet, hello, knock, 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 is anybody home? We're not talking about the infrastructure plan causing inflation. We're talking about the decade worth of Fed accommodation, the decade worth of stimulus from every government. We're talking about that inflation, not the infrastructure plan inflation. But she tried to change the narrative really quickly to calm the markets down, and I think people are smartening up to that.
Well, Kenny, do you think this is, I just was mentioning this earlier, you can't divorce policy from policy. They all get to the same place. You can't have our buffoonish Fed putting this inflation on top of everybody and looking at the increases in capital gains and taxes and not realize that the government's going to steal all your money. There's going to be somebody who has a business that they paid $1 million for that 20 years from now is going to sell for seven because the inflation's going to be seven over the 10 years or 20 years or whatever it is, and they're going to want 60% of the guy's money. And guess what? He didn't make a dime.
Right.
Well, I think that sucks, Kenny. I think that really sucks. And I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. And so there needs to be, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of debate about that. And it might, you know, debate might turn into arguing, but it's going to be a tough fight And the Democrats better hope that they do something within the next 17 months because come the midterm elections, there's a real shot if this crap keeps going on. That they'll lose control, and then they will have a stalemate. Which I suppose a stalemate is better than what we potentially have.
I'm going to say that right now, I'd be stunned right now that the Republicans don't win in 2 years or in 17 months. I'd be stunned.
I would agree with you, but we'll see.
I mean, I don't even know what that
means. You know, they're going to have to act quick if they're going to want to do it. They're going to have to act quick because if it drags too far into 2022, it's going to be right at the top of voters' minds come November.
Well, I don't see how the hell you can take 63% of somebody's capital gain when without any sort of indexing or anything, Kenny.
Right.
I mean,
I don't see it either.
I mean, you and I think are we're not supposed to agree on radio, but I'm thinking you and I are in that. Hey, 25-30% max is all you get to take from somebody. That's plenty, because if we took that from everybody, that's pretty much what we're spending. You don't need to take 63% of somebody, especially when it's been an asset that's been appreciating for 100 years.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how you begin to do that.
Yeah. No, agree.
And then plus, what does it do? I mean, how insidious do we want to get? Does it mean that every individual person has to sell his farm or his business when he dies? I mean I've been reading who gets to buy it? The same people that have bought everything else in the last 10 years?
Right.
I mean, how bad is that, Kenny? I mean, mean,
it is bad, but that's why I think some of these proposals are, you know, way on the edge, and they throw them out there to stir up the conversation. But I have to believe that, you know, that there are more people in the center and more people that are moderate that are going to, you know, that are going to ultimately end up pushing these ideas aside. You know, they're all well and good for them to, you know, for Bernie Sanders and Lizzie Warren to create all this turmoil. But I really do believe, in my heart of hearts, that the center of the country is really in the center, and so therefore, cooler heads will prevail.
Well, anyway. Then you're leaving yourself with a hole. We don't have any money.
Yeah,
it's not like they're not going to spend it anyway. And then what?
Right. No, agreed.
Well, Kenny, are you still in Florida? Are you up? When do you move up for the summer?
No, I'm in Florida. I just did my morning market video from the beach. I'm going to post it any minute now, so you'll see with the ocean behind me, sun coming up. It's gorgeous. No, I live in Florida now. So
I know, but I thought you were
I
thought you were like a two-house guy, you know, type of thing.
No. I sold everything in New York, and I moved to Florida. I mean, I'll be up to Massachusetts over the summer for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, because that's where I'm from, and my whole family's up there. So we'll go up there for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. But no, Florida is my state of residence.
Are you doing these videos like pumping 60-pound curls and on the beach?
No. You mean like John and Jerry? No, I'm not doing that. I'm doing them nice with the ocean in the background. It's peaceful. It's relaxing. The beautiful beach, and as the sun comes up, I find that to be much more relaxing.
Well, Kenny, take care of yourself. As usual, good stuff. SP Futures only down 18 now. We'll come back a little bit. NASDAQ Futures down 109. Come back. Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Three and Kidwell on the board. SP Futures not only down 16, we were down 5, then we were down 20 almost instantly. We'll come back a little bit. And NASDAQ Futures down 99. Do we have Jeff?
Yes, you do.
Jeff, how are you, buddy? A thought from one of your buddies here today. I won't going to say contemporaries. William Shakespeare. If music be the food of love, play on.
There you go.
There you go. How are you?
Just reading about the Merchant of Venice yesterday. Trying to see if there's any parallels with Amazon.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's I'll keep this very brief because nobody cares. As I was manipulating my way through, manipulating is a good word. Economics at Notre Dame was a social science, right? It wasn't the business school, so you actually had to act like you were a Renaissance man, which, of course, you know, I don't know if I am or not. And you had to take three semesters of a language. And you know the way I butcher English, so this was not good. So I finally settled on Italian because there was only like three people in the class or maybe 10. And this old couple had been teaching Italian at Notre Dame for like 30 years, and they were nice. And they were nice to me and gave me B's even though I didn't deserve them. But after two classes, I said to this guy, I go, hey, look, this is not me. I'm a junior. I don't need another. So he said, okay, why don't you go take a class? Do you like plays? I said, I love plays, because I had taken a couple classes from a guy, Dr. Kenvin, who was a Harvard master's degree and Yale School of Drama PhD. Terrific classes. And we did contemporary American plays. But anyway, we did a whole semester of Greek tragedies or Greek plays. And so let's talk about the predecessor to Shakespeare. I mean, there isn't really a Shakespeare play that you can't find. I mean, I won't say plagiarized, but pretty darn close in Greek tragedies, right? I mean, there's almost these same themes. And one thing it taught me, people don't change. I mean, you read what's going on in Greek plays and in Shakespeare, you'd swear you're reading about, you know, somebody today, right? It's the same stuff. People have, human beings have not changed in how many thousand years?
And, only the storytellers. Stories stay the same.
Are people saying it's new this time? No, it's not. Believe me, it's not. It's like inflation being new this time, Jeff. I can't get over. I mean, I'll run it by you because last night I was reading pretty heavily on the new tax proposals. I won't call them laws because they're just proposals. And it's stunning to me that if you look at the inflation argument and what's going on and what I believe has been going on really for a long time, and now you look at these tax proposals and put the two together, God, talk about the fleecing of the population, Jeff. I can't even begin to think that people aren't pissed off about this to the extent maybe they haven't studied it.
Where that perspective would come from on the inflation side, and you and I have discussed that on a number of occasions. But and then recently, it's interesting to see Warren Buffett chime in as well, acknowledging that there is inflation. But tell me more about your perspective as to how the recent tax proposals work into that.
Well, if you. As you know, I've not been a fan ever of the step up basis for people. Just explain what that is. If I, for instance, I don't have any kids, but if I did, and I bought IBM, you know, God knows at some point it must have been $20 a share. I mean, back when it came out, if I bought it when I was 8 years old or something, and now it's worth, where did IBM trade? It's trading 144. Well, if I were to croak tomorrow and had a son or a daughter, and gave them the IBM, they would get the stock, but their new basis is now 144. So if they sold it 10 years from now at 200, they would pay tax on 56, not the 56 plus the 120 that I had in it. And I really thought that's how rich people, I mean, nobody ever pays the tax, capital gain tax, on the 120. And there's some reasons for that. Probably if you go back far enough, people probably don't even know what their basis is, but you can make a stab at it. I mean, if I knew you bought it in 1952, I can make a stab. That's average where IBM was in 1952. To me, that's good enough, Jeff. I mean, right? It's not like we can't come close. So, but that's been called the step-up basis. So people who are wealthy can transfer assets. So it also means if you had a farm, okay, if your dad had a farm that he bought, you know, whatever, 1958, and for $100,000, it's now worth $1 million. When you get the farm, I have no problem you getting the farm and not having to sell it to pay the taxes, to where you get the farm and you get to farm it and not have to sell it. I get that part. As a matter of fact, I'm all for it. But your basis now should not be $1 million. It should be $100,000. So I've been against the step-up basis. But now they're going to go overboard on this, Jeff. They're saying on the farm, not only do if I die, that not only, that I now owe tax on $900,000, which, oh, by the way, is 39% plus 43, so I have to pay,
right, 43. Which means you have to sell the farm.
Well, but now on top of that, they want the estate tax, which is another 18%. So when I, for me, croaking before my kid can keep the farm, somebody's got to pay 61%. Well, for God's, now that's bad enough, Jeff. But if we decided in the last 5 years to inflate the hell out of the place to where the farm is now worth $2 million, when in effect, if you indexed it, is through inflation, it isn't any worth more than $100,000 I paid for it in 1952. They're just taking 61% of my money on nothing. I didn't make anything there, did I? And if you put the two together, it's criminal in my mind. I don't know if that answered your question.
It is without question. And go back to your original premise that you don't think anyone should sell the farm, but that they should have a tax liability. Well, this solution doesn't.
No.
Doesn't allow for that. And that's, you know, that's a problem with our political initiatives, that they always are at extremes, you know. So as opposed to finding some middle point that makes sense, that might be fair, you've got a scenario where you have a forced sale. And, of course, this isn't just farms. This is small businesses. The same thing can happen. Listen, one of the easier arguments is the stepped-up basis for stock. Although, because that exists, you know, that's resulted in an extraordinary amount of charitable giving under that structure, where stock is gifted and at a cost basis that's not transferable to the charitable entity, right? So
yeah.
Lots of charitable giving has been built around just appreciated stock, long-held stock positions.
Right.
And you're going to lose that incentive then.
But
why do you think,
Jeff, I mean, I'll go back to, I think I've discussed this with you before, but I'm not sure. I know what I discussed, but sometimes I forget who I discussed it with. Did I ever discuss the Dan Rostenkowski argument regarding capital gains with you?
No.
Well, Dan was a guy. Obviously, he was the Speaker of the House for a long period of time, and he came to several of the breakfasts and lunch at the CBOE because he was in Chicago, right? And he was head of the Ways and Means Committee, so talk about an important man.
Colorful guy.
But one day, here's a guy. That's when I first took notice of who the hell's really in charge, Jeff. And Danny's this big, strong Polish guy, and he's a grumpy kind of dude. But I mean, he wouldn't be a guy you'd mess with, basically. And he says, you know, somebody asked him about capital gains, and he says, you know, I'll tell you guys. He goes, you're from Chicago. He goes, I'll tell you. He goes, I've been in the camp all along that capital gains should be indexed. And he goes, I can't get anybody to agree with me, and I haven't for all the years I've been here. And to be honest with you, I don't know why. To me, it's such an obvious solution. Because if somebody buys a house, well, houses have special things, but let's just say a house. Because a guy buys a house and he holds it for 1 year, and just that particular year, for some reason, the house goes from 20 to 30, why the hell does that guy get to take half off? He just made 10 grand in 1 year. I mean, what's so sacred about the 1 year? He goes, but if a guy buys a house for 20, in 20 years he sells it for 30, And the inflation rate has doubled, the guy didn't make any money. In fact, he lost money. Why is he paying on anything? He goes, why don't we just index, assuming we have a legitimate CPI number, which we don't have anymore. But
exactly.
But assuming we had a legitimate CPI number, he goes, why don't we just index it and just pay regular taxes at it? Or if you want to give him a little bit of a break on a capital gains because you can't deduct as much, we could probably do that. But the idea of this 1 year all or none sort of thing. Because he goes, I can't get anybody to support that. And to me, it's the simplest, most logical solution out there. Now, why do you suppose he couldn't get anybody to support him? And not to mention, why did he get tossed out of office so quick? I mean, who decided they didn't want an independent guy in that spot? I mean, something's weird about that, Jeff. I mean, I always thought so, even though I wasn't the biggest Danny fan. But, I just, all of a sudden, a guy like him is out there. And ever since then, I mean, look at our speakers. They've always been people that are very co-opted. I mean, the guy from the wrestling coach. You mean the people who didn't put him there didn't know he had problems, you know, behind him?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else seems to have been. I mean, Nancy isn't co-opted.
Yeah, his name is escaping me, too. All I can think of is the letter G.
Hastert. Yeah. Denny Hastert.
Yeah.
Denny Hastert.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, everybody else seems to have had some sort of Newt was there for a little while, and somehow or other Newt skedaddled out of there. I mean, it's just, I don't know, but it just seems odd to me. Why don't we just index it? But, of course, now, what would you do? What would you do now, Jeff, if you had the job I had at Pullman, where I was the inflation guy, and all of a sudden you're in some kind of, you're in a housing business and you got an inflation clause in your contract because you're building houses over a 7-year period or something, and all of a sudden the inflation comes out at like 1.5%, which is total BS, and your lumber just went up, you know, doubled in 4 months. Well, that inflation clause isn't going to help you at all, is it?
No, not at all.
Well, so sure. when you start lying to people, things have their repercussions. How do they manage? What have you been hearing? I heard somebody last night was telling me that of course of a whatever a normal house is. What's how big is a normal house? 1,600 square feet, 18. I have no idea. I mean, Audrey would know all this stuff, but
sure.
Somewhere in there. But a year ago, the cost to build that house, the lumber cost was what, $28,000, and now it's 62 or something in 7 months.
Yeah. Right. And steel, you know, the steel prices have gone way up as well.
But I mean, your 2x4, the guys here in the building that do repair work for people, guys, last year 2x4 was $2-$2.50, and now it's like $8 for a 8-foot 2x4. That's like a lot. A 10-footer is like $10. How does something go up 4 times in a year? You know, I mean, and we have one of the listeners call me the other night, and he said he has a buddy that runs. He works at a sawmill, so I don't know where the hell the buddy lives. Are there sawmills in Illinois? There probably is somewhere, but he says they're withholding everything from the market because they know in a month it's going to be a lot higher. Why should they sell it today when they're going to get more for it in a month? When you start seeing that happen, Jeff, you got trouble. So
we start seeing early signs. I think this for the first time the Fed's going to have to get up a little bit. So Powell basically said that he's going to try to sit back and, you know, maintain this 2% target of the central bank, and wants to see the economy recover a little bit more as long as inflation doesn't, you know, run too far above its goal. But that goes back to, you know, our long-standing discussion as to how they view inflation. I mean, you know, if they're not seeing enough activity right now between housing prices and housing, you know, building elements and pharmaceutical prices, I don't know what they're looking at.
Well, you know, it's. I don't want to make the same reference because it was a dumb reference to Kenny. I'm sure you've seen the movie A Clockwork Orange, which I can only watch once, but.
Right.
But
just once.
But I do remember that there was an amazing amount of photography advancements in that movie, and in terms of technically, isn't it like one of the greatest movies ever made, with the advancements of the different camera angles and everything? I mean, it was a horrible movie to watch, but anyway.
Yeah, I think so too.
They essentially made a guy who was a brutal guy watch brutal scenes as a way to, you know, cure him from being a brutal guy, right? Well, back, I told you this story when I listened to some Fed guy who was on in the late 60s, early 70s, and he was saying that they have these Fed meetings and inflation kept coming here and they kept saying, it was just those dirty Arabs, you know, with the oil and all, it's oil and food. He goes, we started taking all this stuff out, and he goes, there was this guy from the University of Chicago kept saying we were causing it, Milton Friedman, nobody believed him. So all of a sudden we had this meeting, and we said, you know, we all looked at each other and said, you know what, we got inflation, we can't wiggle around it anymore, we just plain got it, we better do something about it. But in those days, I don't think the Fed, what are these people going to do? I mean, you know what though, they're so slick. How's that for a Southside term? They're so slick it doesn't bother them. What are they going to do? Elizabeth, whatever her name is, or this guy from the Barkin yesterday. What are they going to do a year from now when the inflation is percolating along at 8% and everybody's pissing and moaning about the whole thing, and these people have nothing but YouTube stuff, the best economists in the country, 6 months before saying no problem. What are they going to do? What are they going to do with those videos? Scrub them?
Well, hard to say with the videos. I think the fear here is that this is, you know, not just building materials. You know, we're seeing shortages, and maybe this is just a logistic thing or a supply chain thing, because, you know, microchips are having a problem right now too. There's shortages there, not only lumber and drywall and aluminum and steel, you know, and those prices are going to be 10-30% higher essentially, but you're seeing it in areas of electronics too. So I think for the first time we're going to see some real movement in what is currently considered to be an inflation index. Back on a bigger question, because you've been on inflation for a long time, and I've been meaning to ask you, has there ever been any serious effort that you've seen to redefine the CPI?
There have been. It's been redefined. But
it's redefined on a regular basis, but just because the basket changes. It's the allocation of the basket. But there's never been any fundamental changes.
There have been the biggest change, and I can't. I don't know the year, Jeff. There was a substitution factor they put in there. In other words, if for instance, steak is 0.001 of the basket, and all of a sudden steak doubled, they would automatically have some kind of a, I don't know if it was a computer program or what they did. They would say, if it's 0.001, we're gonna take it down to 0.0005, because people are naturally gonna substitute chicken and pork for steak because now it's too expensive. So there was a natural or an automatic adjustment from things like that. In other words, if Nehru jackets got too high, okay, people are gonna stop using Nehru jackets. They're going to wear regular sport coats. I don't know how that happened. I'm going to say 15, 20 years ago. So there's that rotation out of things that are going up too fast. They automatically will. In other words, right now there's probably some sort of an adjustment going on with 2x4s because, I mean, you can get metal. You don't use it in houses that much, but in office buildings you certainly do, right? When you put up walls, they never use 2x4s. They use metal, right? So there's got to be some sort of a, or was it aluminum or something like that light metal you put up? And it's, I don't know if it's structural like 2x4s, but you can use it for a wall in an office building. Now, I'm somewhere, somebody's probably saying, okay, even though lumber is tripled, we're only going to increase it by 2.5% because there's some substitution into these, whatever these things are, aluminum or something. So there's been that sort of formula, and I should know the date because I did, at the time, I was not really happy about it. But, No, and the other part is the basket, the third piece I think is wrong, Jeff, is there's nothing for a new item, like for instance, you live in Evanston, right?
Yes.
Do you guys have parking stickers that you have to have in front of your house, like in Chicago?
No.
Okay. Well, so tomorrow, even though
on some streets, yeah.
Okay, but even though I don't think it's part of the basket, it probably should be. Tomorrow, if Evanston decides, oh, by the way, we're broke, everybody has to buy a $500 sticker to park in front of their own house. So all of a sudden, Jeff has to sit there and go, well, first of all, you're not happy. You're like, oh, bleep. So you write up the $500. Well, now that's nowhere is in the basket, right? So, but now if it's put in the next 3 years, it stays at $500. Then it's actually a non-inflation event for the next 3 years, even though they never picked up the 500 to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Or simple stuff like the toll roads. Now the toll road has become two things: one is it's a toll, and two, it's an incredible tax on people who come through Chicago as tourists and don't have the easy pass. Right. So the toll for you and me might be $1, but for the stupo who's driving in from Idaho on his way to New York, it might be what, $2.50 for him. So if we were to raise on a toll road, they're gonna say, well, we need to raise the tolls. Well, here people are gonna say, wait a minute, let's just raise the other idiot from $2.50 to $4 and keep ours at $1. Well, now what is that? Is that now a stupido tax or is that an increase in the toll? I mean, they can do whatever they want, but the major part is, to me, it's this medical stuff. And it's the education and the fact
healthcare and education. That's
well, because they still have healthcare in there at like 6.5%. I mean, come on, Jeff. It's been 19% of the economy for what, a decade? Mm-hmm. How is it 5% or 6%? So I mean, you go through there.
I know the major changes in the CPI occur generally in line with a new census coming out. So I would think right, and that's been the past. They CPI adjustments have been built around censuses and as that data changes. So I would imagine that there's some readjustment that's going on right now because of the new sentence. We know that it's already resulted in some redistricting of congressional seats.
But you're not going to see
net gains by Texas and Florida.
But I think what you're, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but by asking me the questions that you are, you're seeking, I think, the Jeff Joseph, the honest man that he is seeking some sort of a, I'm going to say a recalculation. And I'm going to say Jeff Joseph's never going to see it. Because I went through the three things I went through on an amazingly rainy day on a Saturday. I went through 20 years of companies like PTI or Luckbox or Tasty Trade or whatever, how much they pay for insurance for their employees. Now, I was charitable toward the CPI people because I didn't go into the huge detail on whether or not people had have higher deductibles and all kinds of stuff. I think if I had done that, it would have been even worse. But I think in the last 20 years, I came up with 2.85% higher, which, you know, basically pushing 3%, 300%, okay? And the inflation for the last 20 years, according to CPI, is 0.52. And I went through and I did higher education, and I dug through, there actually is a site, Jeff, it's beautiful, if I can find it again. Every college, every place, for the last 20-some years, the tuition every single year in room and board, how much it's gone up. I mean, it's really an incredible sight. Same number, 285%. Now, college tuition is somewhere in the 6 to 7% range or 5% range in the CPI. And then this one's really tricky. I tried to get primary education in there, which is really, I mean, there's no way you're going to get the Catholic schools or those kinds of schools. So I just went through the local taxes because local taxes are pretty much on average, what, 55-60% education. So I cheated and did that. Guess what, Jeff? It's almost the same number, 275, 285. So, and if you added those three up, taxes aren't even like in there. I don't even, they might be a small piece of owner's equivalent rent, but they're not even in there. So, and then if you add, so taxes, higher education, and healthcare, the time I did it, they're probably a little higher now, it's like 12% of the basket. You tell me anybody you know, that those three things are only 12% of what they spend on things over a long period of time. What you're sort of asking for, I believe, is for somebody to go back at the CPI and say, we seem like we kind of oofed on a few of these things. I'm going to say if you went back and reevaluated just those three items, you would find that our inflation for the last 20 years has been pushing 3.5%, 4% rather than the 1 or 0 they're saying it is. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. But you're not going to see it.
Right.
So, I mean, we're asking for some sort of an adjustment, and guess what? We're going to be asking for it till the day we croak. We're not going to get it. If anything, they'll go back and do the other way. I mean, does anybody... Because, right. I mean, when I first started looking at this, hospitalization was like 5%. It's managed to creep its way up to like 6.8. Jeff, it's 20% of the economy, for God's sake. It's right in everybody's face. I mean,
and that's the and inflation is, and people don't often think about this, but they should. It's essentially a hidden tax. You know, it's a living tax. It's a tax that the government's not assessing. It's a tax that, you know, life is assessing and your overall balance sheet.
What's a tax or a benefit?
So when you're in a scenario where you have an administration that's, you know, is determined to raise taxes during a period of what will likely be rising inflation, you know,
but if
as a result of some of the economic policies, this will be an interesting period to come.
But if you are one of the people that somehow and look through the society, and you'll find places that have the ability to raise prices and others don't. Okay, I mean Pullman was clearly in the, there were only a couple of rail manufacturers left. And when they went out for a new contract, even though we didn't get very many, and lost money on all of them because it's another story. But, I mean, does the city of Chicago really care whether they pay $800,000 for a railroad car or $900,000? It's not their money.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but I'm saying there are people that love inflation. You don't think McDonald's loves it? I mean, if you have the ability to where you can raise prices faster than the people behind you, I mean, take Pullman, for instance. We had an inflation clause back when I think people tried to make the inflation numbers legit in our contract. And I'm going to say that when I used to do the numbers for the Boston car, if the inflation was up 2% in that quarter, Our contract was, I believe, $60 million, if I remember. I'm going to say, okay, hey, guys, went up 2%. Guess what? You owe us, the contract's now $60,120,000. And they'd say, okay, that was the deal. Now, I had to raise the prices to the union, but I think the union only got 80% of it. All right, so we made out like a bandit on 2% of that, right? Or 20% of that increase. I know we had to pay the trucks guy, you know, wheels and axles. We had to pay the air conditioners guys. I don't know if the seat guy had one in there. If he, but now, if he's a Dumbo and we don't have to raise his, Pullman just made out like a bandit on that, right? I mean, Boston never asked us, oh, by the way, out of all the money you're using to buy product to put in the car, does everybody have a inflation clause? Because me, being an honest man like Jeff Joseph, I would have said maybe half the guys. And now, if you and I work for MBTA, we'd say, why are we paying you for all the guys if you got only goose half the guys, right? Well, half the guys, I'm going to say that if you and I were selling headlights to Pullman and didn't put a clause in there over the 5-year where the inflation damn near doubled, I'm going to say we could have put you out of business, right? So I mean, it's never even. Pullman was we loved it, right? S&P futures up 20, yep. Down 25. NASDAQ futures down 124. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies. My man Ian on the board. SP futures down 23 now. NASDAQ futures down 115. We had made it back to only down 5 earlier in the show, and then we collapsed down to 20, and then made that back a little bit to down 16 or so, and now we're kind of going to the dumper here again. NASDAQ futures, like I said, down 114. Dow futures down 141. Over in Europe, we've got these guys were trying to study earlier. Not anymore. The DAX now down 213, 1.4%. So whatever happened here, it also happened there. FTSE, however, up 7. It was up more earlier. 0.1%. Kekaron down 18. It was up earlier, down 0.3%. So whatever seems to have happened that we still haven't found out seems to have happened everywhere. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei. These guys haven't traded since last Friday. Neither is the Shanghai. However, the Hang Seng is open. It's down, it's up 199.7%. They were down yesterday. As a way of review, yesterday, Dow was up 238.7%. S&P up 11. NASDAQ was down 67, and NASDAQ is continuing to slide today. Bonds, 10-year is down 1 basis point to 1.59. Bund, down 1 basis point to minus 0.21. Japan unchanged at positive 0.09. We've got oil up 77 cents now, 65.26. That's a rally from earlier. Ran up 87 cents, 68.43. Natural gas unchanged at 296. RBOB up 3 cents, 213. And we've got gold down 7 bucks, 17.84 after a big rally yesterday. Silver down 12 cents after an even bigger rally yesterday percentage-wise. A copper down a penny. We got palladium up again today. This goes up every day. I don't know why. Why aren't we long palladium, for God's sake, Jeff? I'm not sure. Up 22 bucks. And we've got crypto is... Bitcoin is down 1,600, but Ethereum is up yet again today. And I have just a little bit of a quote here for you. When Ian's done from with Traffic Weather Sports, I got a quote here. We'll see if and Jeff will guess who it is, but we'll go on, Ian, do the Traffic Weather Sports, and we'll try quotes. Ian, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Oh, do Traffic Weather Sports then, bud.
Yep. You got it. In Chicago, the Eisenhower East is closed due to police activity. At 120 and at 640, there's going to be Cubs games, so keep that in mind if you're driving in North Chicago. Today in Chicago, there's going to be a high of 54. It's cloudy. And in Phoenix, Arizona, it's a high of 94 and sunny, as always. Yesterday, the Cubs were rained out and the Sox were off. The Bulls lost against... Who did the Bulls lose against?
Philadelphia. Philadelphia's got a good team.
Yeah. Yep. Real shame was the Blackhawks.
They were eliminated.
They were eliminated yesterday. 2-5. Did you watch that game?
Yeah, and they got to play these guys two more times with this crazy schedule.
Oh, my God. All right.
Like tonight and Thursday.
Well, I'm not a Blackhawks fan, but...
It's ugly to watch.
I'm sure.
Well, my quote, Jeff will know what this is probably, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon in a sense that it is and can be produced only by a more rapid increase in the quantity of money than an output. A steady rate of monetary growth at a moderate level can provide a framework under which a country can have little inflation and much growth. It will not produce perfect stability, it will not produce heaven on earth, but it can make an important contribution to a stable economic society. Who's that, Jeff?
Bernanke, probably.
No, long before Bernanke would never say that. He doesn't believe in it.
I'm sorry. That's more like a Milton, maybe.
Milton Friedman, yeah.
Something like Milton.
Yeah,
I don't
Milton know. Friedman, 1970. Counter-revolution and monetary theory.
Who is it? Say again?
Milton Friedman.
Oh, Milton Friedman. Okay. Yeah. All right. So it's my second guess.
And here's one you'd love to make politics an avocation, not a vocation. I think you'd agree with that.
Well, I agree with that for sure, but I don't know who's the father of term limits. Who would that be?
Yeah, I don't know. But here was one in there was nothing in these views to repel a student or to make Keynes attractive. Keynes had nothing to offer those of us who he sat at the feet of Simons, Knight, and other people. He was not a Keynes fan. To say,
who was it? Hayek.
I mean, you know what Keynes? When he was young, what he did. This is scary. He was one of the, if not the key economist at the Treaty of Versailles. How'd that work out?
Oh.
How'd that work out?
Yeah, right.
Are you a question from off the wall? And I'll ask Ian the same thing. Are you a proponent of the opinion that there was World War I and World War II, or do you just want to call it the 35 years war with a 20-year break?
I'll go with 1 and 2. It makes it easier when you're flipping through channels.
Yes, it does. But there's an argument for the second.
Right. There is.
You know, at the Treaty of Versailles, that when they got up from the table, 95% of the then known oil reserves in the table were on one side.
Nope.
And you know which side?
Hasn't. Wouldn't be our side.
Well, sure was. It was on the side of the Allies. Germany didn't get the Germans
95% of the oil reserves?
Well, I mean, the Germans had no access to any of it.
Sure, that's true. That's right.
So what's going on in the magazine? What do you guys? Last week you started to tell us what the new there's new ones coming out.
Yeah, we're still focused on Amazon right now. We're doing the deep dive into Amazon, all aspects of the company. One thing that you'll find interesting, we're still in the middle of investigating this, but it'll be part of the feature story in the next issue, which will be a hard look at Amazon, kind of like the good, the bad, the ugly about Amazon. You know, from a macro perspective, of course, you could say that Amazon is one of the contributors to lower consumer prices, right? Because it enables shopping for price, which is still its number one attribute. You know, the one-day shipping is a big attribute, but of course, you know, price seems, people have it in their head from the marketing, essentially, that Amazon means cheaper prices. It's not true, but that perception is particularly important to the consumer, and it has a lot to do with the loyalty and the stickiness of the average Amazon client. In our own reader survey, over 78% of our subscribers, you know, the 70,000 subscribers of Luckbox Magazine, they are Amazon Prime members. 95% use the platform. Those are huge numbers. And the number one perception is that because it's cheaper. And then shipping, you know, next day shipping is a major asset, and that comes in second. But when you think about that, you know, I mean, if you had the impression that something was always going to be cheaper than something else, that's going to, you know, determine a lot of consumer loyalty. And it really contributes to, you know, the stickiness of their client.
Jeff, how do you, obviously when it comes to politics and killing people and stuff, they used to call it the big lie theory, but it basically has to do with people believing things over a long period of time that essentially aren't true, right? Or they don't know whether they're true or not. But I'm gonna say that, you know, I'd still like to keep my finger in the remodeling stuff, A, because I think it's good for the show that I actually know kind of what's going on with the pricing and how, you know, whether people are getting work to help people with their kitchens. And I mean, and plus, I like to talk to everybody at all different stages of life, which is otherwise, that, you know, I just like talking to people. But by and large, if you were to ask everybody would absolutely tell you that whatever you're going to go buy, you're better off at Home Depot than you are at the local hardware store. They don't know that. They don't know that at all. They've never checked. And probably some stuff they're right and some stuff they're not right. And if you were to tell a guy at the hardware store,
it's that perception of bulk. Bigger is cheaper. Yeah.
I mean, how many people have walked into the local Ace and said, you know, whatever, the guys at Home Depot charge, you know, $30 a gallon for paint. If anybody thinks that's cheap, I got a bridge for you. By the way, what if I just came here and bought my paint? Would you sell it to me for $30? The answer is going to be yes. I would think. You gain this perception over time that somehow they're not lying to you. They're not coming out every day and beating at your head saying, by the way, but somehow you get this feeling and it just keeps rolling, and all along it's probably not true. One thing I've learned is when you're doing decks and porches and remodeling, you can spend, I probably spent, I'm going to say, big three-story deck in the back and over the garage and replaced virtually all the boards and a lot of the stuff. I'm going to say that I don't know what I spent on the wood. I'm almost tempted to go look based on what the prices are today. I'm going to say, Jeff, I spent $1,400 on fasteners. Easy, maybe more than that, because I use all stainless steel. I don't want the stuff rusting in my new wood. And I got some of the best stuff, and I went to Home Depot, and I went to Menards. And finally, I went online and just went right to the company. I was getting the stuff a third of the price online than at Home Depot and Menards. And I'm going to say the one time I did buy it at the Ace Hardware, they were cheaper, or as cheap, or as expensive, whatever you want to call it, as the other guy. There's no savings there. There's no savings whatsoever. And yet, if you were to ask anybody...
I'll tell you a story on Amazon that we're working on now that I think you're going to find most interesting. And it's too early for us to get into the detail of it because we're still investigating it.
Okay.
But based on our early research thus far, it becomes pretty clear that Amazon is working a float game with all of its vendors. Well, first of all, we have one story that speaks to how much product's actually coming out of China that's being sold on Amazon's platform in the U.S. And it appears as somewhere between 47 and 50% of everything sold in the United States on Amazon has been manufactured in China. So that's an interesting story, and we're getting down to the bottom of that as well. So that's something that's not thought of frequently. But more importantly, or let's say on a different track, all the small businesses that have shops essentially on Amazon, they use it as a platform to sell their own products, which of course then Amazon eventually replicates the successful ones and sells them at greater margin. But all those small businesses that transact through Amazon, that are promoted through Amazon, their terms of payment have been getting wider and wider over the last 3 years. And what that means is when ABC Company sells its toy on Amazon, and Amazon collects the money, and ABC Company ships out the toy, Amazon is taking longer and longer to pay ABC Company. We're getting down to the bottom of it, but it's a discernible and factual scenario that they're playing with the balance sheet and extending payment terms. And considering the scale of Amazon, that means the small business has become one of the greatest lenders right now in the current e-commerce economy, even more so for the banks. They have more money out on float that they've already, you know, sent out their product and still waiting for payment, and Amazon is playing the bank there, sitting on that float.
Well, the small business is borrowing it from their bank and lending it to Amazon.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Essentially.
They got to be factoring a receivable, I would think, and the bank is accepting the receivable from Amazon. But the interesting part is
Amazon has been extending its payment terms. By extending, I mean just delaying its payment terms systematically over the last several years.
Okay,
so they're sitting on the float for a longer time. They're either doing it, you know, on behalf of their balance sheet or just doing it because of the float itself. But the people taking the brunt of that, of course, is a small business who is just completely reliant upon Amazon. We talked to Via Hart. Molson Hart is the CEO of this toy company. They do about $8 million annually in toy sales. And he spoke to his complete dependence that he has on Amazon because 85% of his revenue comes from Amazon transactions. He sells cheaper on his own site than Amazon, but of course everyone buys through Amazon as opposed to going to his site and buying the product cheaper.
All right, so
yet his margin is much, much lower on Amazon than any other platform, whether it be eBay, of course lower than his own site, you know, whatever the hardware was, because Amazon builds in all these additional fees to its third-party vendors. So Amazon benefits from this, so they have the lion's share of his revenue, and it represents the smallest margin, and now they're taking him longer and longer and longer to pay.
All right, so Jeff, I have to ask you, and if you don't, feel free to not answer. Back in the day, you and I, when interest rates were, I won't say normal, when they were pretty high, say 6, 7, 8, 10%.
Not the Carter years.
Well, what I'm saying is there were real reasons why the Chief and Jeff show that would do everything we possibly could to pay Ian on Thursday versus Wednesday. I mean, we actually got, you know, real money for hanging, you know, for hanging a day because, you know, we're playing the float, okay? But now there basically is no float. So
that's right.
So what is the is the motivation to put these guys under so you can, if you think they're making good dough, that you can just build a business just like them and sell the product yourself?
It's a great question, and that's actually the question that we're trying to focus on. What is the motivation for that?
Because
it's not purely about acquisitions, because, you know, they're sitting on a pile of cash right now. It's not like they've spent all their money on acquisitions. So what is the reason?
Well, plus the Fed has gone down this routine, and as anybody can tell, I mean, I'm not a violent guy, but I'll tell you what: if somehow or another, I was the what they call the guy? What was Kiefer Sutherland? He was the accidental president or whatever when the place blew up, and he was the guy.
Sure.
If you drop me in there tomorrow, I would go to the next Fed meeting. I don't know how this would probably go over like a fart in church, Jeff, but I would go to the next Fed meeting with literally however many people are there, and I'd get a resignation from every person. I want to know, there's a motivation here that I don't quite get. How are we driving so much money in the system? You might remember this, and I should because I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to say that Amazon went out for, last time they went out for cash, Didn't they, what, pay 2.3% for 10 years or something? Now, if I'm doing that as the Fed, and I'm doing this for reasons to make the economy better, I can't be a blind son of a bee and not realize that it's not working its way down. I did a report a while ago that since 2009, when this all started with the interest rates, the credit card rates have actually gone up. Now, in the last year or so, I think they might have come down a little bit, but they actually went up. So if you're a Fed guy, how do you not realize that whatever you're trying to do is not working? So I'm going to say, when you do this, I'm going to ask you guys to do this. You're probably already thinking you're way ahead of me. I'm going to say, find out how much the local guy is paying to factor these receivables to Amazon versus what Amazon just paid for a 10-year, whenever it was a year ago, they went out for more money. I'm going to say that the local guy is paying 6.5% at least to factor those receivables, and Amazon's getting money at 2%. This is not what the Fed should be doing. This is not what government. And at the same time, they got a bunch of buffoons there telling Amazon they're going to break them up. They're the ones that are making them, Jeff. I mean, the NASDAQ or the FINRA or the SEC can talk all they want about the dear departed Bernie Madoff being a crook. They made the man. They made the guy. They knew he was a crook, and they put him. They legitimized him by putting him as the head of the NASDAQ electronic committee or something. I mean, these guys are making Amazon. Yeah. How would you, if you and I, we're just not slimy enough. If you and I were able to go borrow for 2.5%, we would probably say, let's go have a beer. That's pretty damn good. The thought of forcing the next guy to pay 7 because we don't want to pay him, Jeff, I would never even think of that, would you?
No, that's right.
I mean, how sleazy are these people? That somebody in Amazon, with all the gifts they've been given, that they got to find a way to screw this guy for 5% or whatever it is they're doing. I guess you hit a nerve with your discussion here with me today.
No, it's an interesting angle that we're definitely spending some time on right now, trying to figure it out. So you speak of legislation. I noticed that Josh Hawley's, we've been trying to speak with him, but he's busy on a press tour with his book that he just released a couple days ago. We just got an advanced copy of it. It's called The Tyranny of Big Tech, and it, you know, everybody now, it's become fashionable, so it's we're at an interesting political point when you have Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz agreeing on a major principle with Elizabeth Warren and AOC, and, you know, everybody's putting their name on legislation that's directed towards breaking up Amazon, and I went through Hawley's new book last night, the advanced copy of it, and it makes a case that we all know, you know, that all the different areas that Amazon is involved in unfair practice. I think what's most interesting, we're doing this large survey, and anybody can jump in on it. It's at luckboxmagazine.com is where the survey is. But as I said, we have 95% of people acknowledging that they buy from Amazon, and yet 40% would support breaking the company up. And then only 35% would be against any kind of boycott of Amazon, you know, to send a message. So there's a little hypocrisy in consumer habits, you know. They know that Amazon's not playing fair, but, you know, there's something to be said for convenience and price and good customer service, all of which, you know, Amazon undoubtedly has.
Well, people are broke too.
So
Jeff,
it's an interesting topic. There's a lot of nuance to it.
Well, people,
you know,
are
clearly
broke.
You've seen Amazon's made the messaging decision, the PR decision, to try to get out in front of this labor issue that's starting to bubble up in a big way. We've spoken to one of the major labor activists by the name of Christian Smalls, who is who's part of that Bessemer plant that started this kind of labor revolt. And you saw recently in the last 10 days that Amazon announced that they're going to increase payments to 500,000 workers. But that issue is not going to go away. So I think we're going to see Amazon front and center being attacked by both the left and the right in some sort of unique manner. I think that's one odd opportunity that we have, both sides of the aisle might come together on some sort of form of legislation this year.
Well, it's because people have people are inconsistent, Jeff, because they have, the economy does strange things to folks, right? I mean, I'm going to say that you had your, and I'm not going to use you personally, even though I will. You have the young lady who's at the University of Illinois, correct? I'm assuming she's doing great.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish her the best. Okay, well.
My daughter.
Let's say 4 years from now, she gets out of grad school or someplace, gets her apartment downtown, and you and the mom want to make sure if you guys ever get invited over, which you know if you are, you are, you at least have a glass of wine, a glass to drink some wine out of, right? And, so the only way you know that for sure is to go out and buy them yourself, right? But I've never really met, and then I'm not just blowing smoke up your behind, anybody who has more morals in what they're doing with the magazine and taking these investments than you do. But I also know, and I never met your wife, I'm sure she's terrific, that when you go to buy all the stuff for the daughter's apartment, you're probably going to go to IKEA because you know you can get her 100 glasses for $50.
Exactly right.
And so on the one hand, you're going to put out a magazine that's going to say these people in China, by the way, they got slave labor, not paying anybody anything. Yet the next token, I'm not, you know, again, I'm just using your name. I would probably do the same thing.
That's right.
You're going to be at IKEA because you can get her 15 shot glasses for her pals at $1 a throw and not $3 a throw because you figure they're only going to break them anyway.
It's very true.
It's
the problem we all have. Well, we're knee-deep in this Amazon issue, and we've just uncovered all these bad practices. I mean, it really is an ugly business. And for people who say, hey, look, they're just winning at the game of capitalism, you're wrong. No, they're not playing by the rules. This isn't capitalism, so it's not a good argument, and you know, we'll try to make that case clearly. And, you know, we're capitalists and went into this with an open mind, but they're not playing by the rules in any way. But it's so easy to just be a hypocrite. So, you know, while we're knee-deep in the middle of this, I get an email from Amazon that says, we just recently had credit card fraud, so I had to change the account number, and it said something about you have to update your card and your Prime membership. And I'm looking and I'm thinking, well, Jesus, what a moment of truth this is. What am I going to do here? Am I going to renew this? Sure enough, it turned out to be a fake email. You always have to look at where that email was sent from. So fortunately, I didn't have to make that call. But, I was faced with that moment of truth, and quite frankly, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
I know
it's very difficult.
I know I've decreased my Amazon purchases dramatically, but there's a couple of shows on Amazon Prime that I like. You know?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, for me, I mean, I, you know, what the, how many clothes do I buy, right? But I tell you what, if I had, I could go and Google, you know, blue jeans made in the U.S. or khakis made in the U.S. and you know they're $125 instead of $75. I can do that, Jeff. I mean, how many khakis am I going to run through? I don't crawl around on my hands and knees in the backyard anymore, right? But if I got five kids under the age of six, guess what? We're going to what's the Old Navy or some damn place because I don't care. I know these guys; they're going to rip them before anything else happens, right? I mean, I'm going to get something from God knows where, and I don't care as long. The thing is, I'm getting older enough where I do care. But the weird part of it is, you couldn't bring anything into my grandparents' home. If you bought my grandfather something and it didn't say Union Made, you're making the trek back. I mean,
Chief, let me give you a fair warning heads up. I've got a phone that's giving me notice that it might be on its last leg, so just in case I lose you. But let me mention something else. That argument as to do you pay more just to pay more. There's a book called How to Resist Amazon and Why, and it's a good read. It's by Danny Kane. He's the owner of a just remarkable bookstore in Lawrence, Kansas, called the Raven Bookstore. And so How to Resist Amazon and Why by Danny Kane. We interviewed him, spoke to him a couple days ago. In chapter one, he says, buy from my bookstore even though I'm more expensive. He gave the example in the economics, you know, a book that is wholesaled at $14 that should be sold for $28, Amazon sells at $14.50. And they do it just to buy consumer loyalty the same way they did with the diaper business. And the result of that is why there's no more bookstores and no more independent bookstores and, you know, that experience is lost. So he's saying if you want to support the ecosystem of the arts and independent bookstores, just be willing to pay more. Because what they're doing, it's impossible for anyone to beat them. And he makes a really articulate argument why you would consider paying more for books. That it has changed that one habit. I buy lots of books, particularly for our magazine, and we are not buying books from Amazon, and we will not link books in our magazine to Amazon going forward either. The bookseller industry. It's just
Jeff, let's,
not something we're comfortable doing.
Let's tee this up a little bit next week. And you know what? Why don't we, since Better World Books was one of the biggest booksellers ever on Amazon, why don't we, if you wouldn't mind, why don't we ask Kevin to pile in for 10 minutes while you're on next week, because he was the IT guy at Better World Books. Because I think
it's... Oh, terrific, yeah.
But when you said earlier, we'll tee it up for next week, because I get the feeling now that Amazon's actually charging more than the people who are doing it themselves. Like you mentioned, we got a dash. SP Futures down 22, NASDAQ Futures down 109. Looking forward to next week already. Jeff, take care of yourself.
Brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.